Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Life's about choices. Which career should I pursue? Should I break up? Should I get married? Where should I live? Big decisions can be agonizingly difficult to make. Part of the difficulty in some choices is that all of the alternatives have both pros and cons. Rutgers University lecturer and philosopher Ruth Chang has a new way to look at these hard choices. In welcoming Ruth to Open House, we started with what a philosopher actually does.
That is an excellent question. First of all, I should say it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on your show. Many people, I think that philosophers sit, you know, in their armchairs in an ivory tower and scribble. There's some of the academy that engages in work that may appear to be meaningless scribbles. But in fact, we're all engaged in an enterprise of trying to understand some of the most fundamental phenomena in our universe, things that are of great importance to human values, human existence. But, you know, it's quite hard.
One of your special passions in life is helping us make difficult choices, weighing up the evidence, and if there's no clear winner, where we go next. Perhaps informed in part because of some of the early choices you made in life. For instance, you chose to study the law as opposed to philosophy, which is what you're most highly regarded for today.
Yes. So I came from an immigrant family, and, you know, face it, humans are basically told what to do, and we tend to be very unreflective. And security was a big issue in my rather modest immigrant home. So I grew up being told, probably because I was very argumentative, that I would be a lawyer and, you know, work on Wall Street and make a ton of money. And so when I was in college, you know, the great thing about college is this is the time for you to explore and expand your mind. I took a lot of philosophy classes. I was a philosophy major. I just loved philosophy. But, you know, it didn't seem plausible to have a career sitting around spinning theories. So I went to law school. And after law school, I found myself in a job where I actually spent all my time working on a pro bono death penalty case. And I remember my senior partner calling me in after 2 months of working on this death penalty case. Chang, he said, you haven't made us a dime. So he immediately put me on a very large litigation case, which involved defending the manufacturers of a valve that was used in cooling nuclear power plants. And we were defending the manufacturers of that valve, and it seemed to me the valve was defective. And, you know, I decided I just can't do this. This wasn't me. It didn't fit. It wasn't who I was. And so I went back to philosophy and got my PhD, and now I'm a professional philosopher and loving every minute of it.
You turn your back on the win-lose understanding of the world of the law, though, and move into philosophy, where the margins are a whole lot more nebulous. How did you make that choice as a way of perhaps helping us understand difficult choices?
Right. So I think that there's a way of thinking about hard choices that, in a way, undermines that way of thinking. So the way you pose the question is a very common, reasonable, plausible way to think about big choices in life. Which one's going to be best for me? Which one am I going to be best at? And so on. But I think hard choices really have to be understood in a different way. See, what's implicit in the way you frame the question is the problem of uncertainty. When we make big choices in our lives, chances are, you know, whom to marry, whether to have children, what career to pursue, and so on. Chances are we have no idea the outcomes of each of the possible alternatives. We really just don't have enough information. And so the way we conceptualize these big choices is, oh, I need more information. If only I had more information. So in a way, we take what I think of as a scientist's approach to the world, which I think is a mistake. The broadly speaking, scientific approach to the world is there are certain facts in the world, and, you know, I need to put on my white lab coat, roll up my sleeves, and go find them. And once I find those facts, then choices will be easy.
You're singing my life theme song here, Ruth.
But life is not like that.
No, you're right.
So, So the big choices we face, I believe, are ones in which once we figure out what it is that matters in the choice, and that's not an easy thing to begin with, we'll discover that, in fact, there is no best alternative. Or rather, what we should contemplate in advance is when we're facing a big choice, it's just possible that the alternatives are such that neither is better than the other, that there is no best alternative. And if you entertain that possibility, the thought of having to beat your head against a wall and trying to find out all the facts of how each alternative might pan out in your life disappears, because more information is not actually relevant if the truth is neither is better than the other.
When we're facing then a hard choice, is there a strategy in your experience that we could employ to move through it to a successful outcome?
If I had to boil down the framework that I propose in thinking about hard choices into steps, I would give you, I guess, 5 steps.
Hang on, I'm getting a pen. We're going to write these down.
The first two represent the normal way of thinking about choice generally. Okay, so the first step is you got to figure out what matters to you, right? You got a couple of alternatives, say, and you have to figure out, well, what is it that matters to me in the choice between these two alternatives? Mm-hmm. Second step is you do the thing that we all know you should do, which is get the information. You get out the yellow pad, you draw the line in the middle, and you list the reasons for and against. You do the pros and the cons. So these first two steps are the steps where I think most people just think, okay, that's it, 1 and 2. And then you lather, rinse, and repeat. And then eventually, you know, you'll just get to an answer that one is better than the other.
Yeah.
But I don't think that happens in the most interesting choices that we can face. In the third step, what you discover is, well, you've done all this informational pros and cons. You've racked your brains, you've asked your wise friends for advice and so on, and yet neither seems better than the other. More information is not going to help you. Okay, so the third step is you realize, ah, neither's better than the other, they're not equally good, they're comparable, there is no best alternative, they're on a par. Fourth step is, okay, now what do you do once you realize this is a hard case where there is no best alternative? One thing you should do is recognize that whatever you do, you won't be acting against your reasons. So, you know, this gentleman who wrote to me from the military, if what he faced was a hard choice, leaving his military job and opening up his own business, or staying in his military job, continue to provide for his wife and family without much risk and so on, neither would be a mistake of reason. That, I think, should be a huge load off his mind. It's not that the world is telling him that he made a mistake, right, that he should have done this thing as opposed to another. The world is silent as to what he should do. Mm-hmm. So now the question is, what should he do? Well, here's something he could do. He could put his agency, that is, commit, throw himself behind one option as opposed to the other. Wholeheartedly commit to it. And he needs to reflect, right? It's not just a matter of lurching for one alternative or the other. It's reflecting and thinking, okay, well, what can I really stand behind? Can I stand behind an option where I risk the welfare of the financial security, welfare is a little too dramatic, the financial security of my young child?
Yeah.
And maybe he can, right? In order for him to pursue his dream of making some, I don't know, fancy widget. Okay, so if he can, then he can commit to that option. And by committing to that option, he can create reasons for himself to leave the military and open up a business. But he might commit the other way. The shape of the problem is different. It's not a problem of figuring out what the world is telling you. It's a problem of figuring out what you yourself can commit to, what you can put your very agency behind.
You also recommend we employ reflection as part of our choices. What's its role and how can we use it so as not to make the decision process more complex?
Another great question. So a lot of people, when they hear this kind of line of thought, think that what I'm saying is, oh, here's what you should do when you face a hard choice and you don't know what to do, do what you want to do. Or alternatively, do what expresses your core values.
Mm.
And that's not what I'm saying at all, because our core values, the way I understand our core values, are values or desires, motivations, and so on we have that are put into us by our upbringing, our genetic makeup, you know, our psychology, and so on. So, you know, think of someone who was raised in a completely unrelenting sexist or racist environment. His core values are going to be sexist and racist, unless he reflects. So here's this amazing power of the human mind, where we can actually reflect, step back from our motivations, our desires, our core values, and think about the question, gosh, should I really value that? And the kinds of considerations you can bring to bear in answering that question can move you away from being the sort of person who just drifts through life, living according to the desires, motivations, the core values that were put into you, to someone who takes charge of his life, who's the author of his life, who says, look, I reject that value that, you know, comes from my upbringing, and I am going to be like this. I can put my agency behind this different set of values. And I think that's the first step to realizing that when the world is silent, the silence of the world plus the power of human reflection is what gives us the kind of freedom and power, really, to make ourselves into individual agents.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.